What's up, everybody? It's the Energy is Love and all that shit. You know, Energy is Love podcast. We'd like to thank all of our listeners for downloading and subscribing. You guys have gone out and done it. We appreciate it. Remember, you can find us on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, every podcast app that you can think of. We're on there, so go search us out. Oh, yeah. Almost forgot. You can now listen to us on YouTube. Go subscribe to us in our YouTube channel. You can find all of our episodes there. We'll also be updating and releasing all the new episodes there as soon as they come out. If you haven't checked us out on Facebook, do so. It's the Energy is Love podcast. Tons of cool shit happening out there with the podcast, and I'm super thankful and excited. For example, we get to talk about Zen Float Company. What say you? ZenFloatCo.com? This is the first affordable in-home float tank. For those of you who don't know, a regular float tank is this typically a huge, ginormous, pod-like looking thing. They fill them up with 300 gallons of water and somewhere around 1,200 pounds of salt, and you just sit back and float in the tank. But you typically can't find those unless you're at a high-end spa or float center, somewhere like that. You want to own your own? Now you get the opportunity to float at a fraction of the cost. Zen Float designed and created an in-home float tent that regular everyday people like you, like me, like everybody else out there can afford. The tents are solidly built from stainless steel and canvas. It's 4 feet wide, 8 feet long, which gives you more than enough room to float, but also makes it feasible, so you can put it up in your house wherever you want. The water is continuously heated by their radiant heating system, which allows you to float as long as you want. It also has a dual UV pump cleaning system so the water stays nice and clean and pure for each of your floats. They ship the tents all over the world. Plus, the tent looks like a super cool kick-ass pyramid, this wonderful flotation of wonder experience. The guys at Zen Float love floating, and now they've made it so more people like you and me can lay back and experience all the super cool shit that you do when you float. Make sure you go to our Facebook page, Energy is Love Podcast, and you can click on the link there to Zen Float. Because you're a listener of the podcast for the universe, when you go to Zen Float Co. and buy your tent, you get to enter the promo code at checkout, Energy is Love, and they'll give you a free pair of underwater headphones. Then you get to float with your headphones and listen to the podcast at the same time. Just saying. We also have to thank DeBry Man for sponsoring small businesses for the past 10 years. The podcast wouldn't be what it is today without the support from DeBry Man. Be sure to contact us at the podcast. It's energyislovepodcast@gmail.com. If you're interested in being on the show, we'd love to chat with you. Hope everybody enjoys whatever episode is coming up. I'm sure you will. It's going to be awesome, just like all the episodes. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. The Energy is Love podcast. The podcast for the universe. Nama fucking stay. Hello, universe. Here we are. You are about to embark and listen to episode 19 of the Energy is Love podcast. It's the podcast for the universe. On this episode, we have the highly enlightened and amazing Amber Tuiasoa. I have to pronounce her name like that because it's a tongue twister, and I apologize, Amber, but it's Tuiasoa. Amber is an energy practitioner with a great ability to guide and assist people on their journeys. She's a free thinker who looks to expand her mind and consciousness daily. In this episode, we chatted about some ideas, concepts, and beliefs that her and I both kind of hold in regards to spirituality and the universe. One of my favorite parts of the episode is when we go really deep into the discussion regarding the concept of time and past lives and all the kind of inner workings of that shit, and my brain is still trying to recover. Amber also designs and makes custom jewelry using crystals and stones. She uses her ability and her connection to the universe and all those greater things out there when she works on a piece, and the result is some truly amazing and inspiring pieces of jewelry. Really works of art. You can find her work online at her Etsy shop. It's Immortal Jewelry, and also search her out on Facebook. She's got a Facebook page. It's Immortal Jewelry as well. Check out some of those examples of her work and then connect with her, and she can actually create one specifically for you. She kind of channels in that space and creates pieces for people that are specifically designed for that person and what they need at that time. So here's another mind-bending, wonderful episode of the Podcast for the Universe, Energy is Love podcast with Amber Tuiasoa.
You're listening to the Energy is Love podcast.
Energy is Love.
The Energy is the Love podcast.
The Energy is Love podcast.
Energy is Love.
The
podcast.
The podcast for the universe.
The Energy is Love podcast.
What is up, everybody? It's the Energy is Love podcast. You know that already because you're listening to it. My guest today is Amber. And Amber, I'm going to let you pronounce your last name because it's a tough one.
Okay. It's Amber Tuiasoa.
Tuiasoa.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful last name.
Thank you.
Where's it from? Where does it kind of originate from?
I was married to a half Tongan man.
Oh.
Yeah. And I kept the name because we had five children together and, you know.
Just makes life easier.
Yeah, it was practical.
And it's badass. It's a cool name.
Yeah. And I'm the only one on the planet, apparently.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming out and doing the show. I really appreciate it. I'm excited to talk to you because honestly, you have a whole bunch of like, we know each other somewhat. We've done some events together and things like that. But for the most part, I don't know all that much about you. But from what I do know, you're super interesting. And that's why I wanted to talk to you. Because the podcast, I just like to interview people that I want to talk to.
Yeah.
And then hopefully everybody else wants to learn about them.
Yeah.
So we were visiting a little bit before the show and you talked about a trip recently to Mount Shasta. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me all about it. I want to hear.
Okay. Where to begin?
First off, when did you go? Like how recent was it?
It was for about a week and it was, I'm really not that great with dates.
Was it this year?
It was like a week and a half ago. Well, okay. Excuse me. It was over the solstice.
Over the solstice.
Yeah. So we were there for the 20th and the 21st. My recollection says we went out on the 18th and then we got to Shasta, stayed there for a bit during the solstice, went out to the Redwoods. Super magical too.
Yeah.
Went back to Shasta, stayed there, and then headed back home. So we were there for maybe 8 days.
And so people that aren't familiar with it, you can get online and obviously Google it, but it's kind of one of those places where it's supposed to have some really amazing kind of powerful energy there.
Mm-hmm, most definitely.
Yeah. So that's what I want to know about.
Yeah.
Because I've never been there before. It's one of those places, it's kind of on my bucket list where, right. You know, what's like, not Sonoma. What the hell?
Sedona.
Arizona. Sedona.
Yeah.
That's another one that I want to go to and everything like that. But tell me, what did it feel like to be there?
Well, it's considered to be the root chakra of the planet at this time. Mm-hmm. And it shifts at times, but as far as for, I don't know how many hundreds of years, it's been the root chakra, which was super beneficial for me because I have a tendency to not always stay in my body or stay in my root, you know? So going out there was really just an integrating experience. And funny enough, there was a full moon in Sagittarius, which is, I'm a Sagittarius. And so I quite expected there to be some emotional uprising, but in all reality, I felt so grounded, so solid, and yet so light at the same time. You know, that feeling that you get if you've been meditating for a long time, or you're just in a super blissful state, you've done some pranayama or something like that. I was just really in a really, really good space. And people around me, you could tell, were releasing a lot of other things that were going on in their lives. And I felt so grounded that I felt like I could kind of hold space, which was interesting because typically I'm opposite. In other words, like I'm a transmuter. Like, yes, we all transmute things. And I have a tendency to transmute within a 33-foot range around me.
Okay.
In masses. So sometimes I have to be careful where I go because I get overly sensitive about things. But there it was just like, I don't know.
It was kind of in that space.
But not grounded in a way that you typically think of it. Like you can hit the ground running and just get a lot of stuff done. It was more like I was clear. I knew exactly what was going on. I could see everything perfectly from where I was sitting. There wasn't a space of judgment. It was just like I knew what to say, when to say it, and how to say it. I felt more centered. I felt more authentic in myself.
Did you guys take like the whole family and do the trip, or was it?
We didn't take the whole family. It was essentially me and my sweetheart, Daniel, and my sister, Heather, and her son, and my oldest daughter, Zion.
And so was it like, I mean, when you went there, did you guys go there for a specific purpose? Was there some event going on or some retreat or something like that? Or did you guys just go and camp and stay here?
That's a good question. Ultimately, we went because we all felt the pull. We knew.
Yeah.
And oftentimes, when I go to sleep at night, I'll remember what I did before I wake up, you know, either in the astral realm or different things like that. And so there's times I'm like, oh, I'm supposed to go here and do this. So I knew that that was one of those things, as well as Daniel kind of kept mentioning it around the same time instead of my sister. So I it's vaguely, all those signs, huh? Right. You're like, all right, I get it.
Yeah.
So I ultimately found that we all were really kind of meeting up in those sleep time realms and saying like, okay, it's time to go and center. And everybody has the ability to really, when they're falling into their calling, so to speak, in life, or their...
That's a beautiful way to kind of phrase it, falling into your calling. Yeah, mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah, because it's really not forcing it. Mm-hmm. It's like allowing it, right? And sometimes it seems a little crazy and it seems like unexpected, and it seems like things are a little bit like things will, how do I express that? Things will sound to be really challenging at the time when you're going to fall into falling. Those. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's funny.
Yeah.
And yet it's like exactly what you've needed, right? Mm-hmm. And we all know this is just kind of common knowledge. And I had this experience one time where I was in meditation and I connected with Ganesh. And he's supposedly the remover of obstacles. Mm-hmm. And what he told me in that experience was sometimes he will put obstacles in the way to get out of the way. So for instance, if you've got a job that is not the most beneficial job for you and it's time for you to just leave it and move on to something new for you to move up to your next level of transformation, etc., then sometimes a situation will happen in that job where it will feel like you just can't do it anymore, and it will feel like really challenging and scary and things mm-hmm. like that. But in reality, it's just like, oh, like, relax into it, fall into it, and say, okay, this is telling me I'm done with this. So
that's the hardest damn thing to do.
Yeah. Like, I know, especially because you're like, you're wanting to control the situation and things are so unexpected.
Have you ever had anything like that before?
Oh, I can't even count how many times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where, because that's you described it really well, where I think a lot of times that's what happens. Like you said, something pops up.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my God, it seems so devastating. You're so cataclysmic in the moment. And how am I going to ever kind of move through this? And it's going to change my life forever. And it's so mm-hmm. miserable. And I'm going to lose all of this and lose all of that.
Yeah.
And then like 6 months later, you can look back and be like, oh.
Yeah.
That's the reason didn't even for all of that shit it. To happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually have a story about that if you want to hear.
For sure.
Okay. So at the time I was married and I had 3 children. I had just a little tiny baby. She was, I think, 2 weeks old. And we were trying to move up to the U of U or near the U of U so my former husband could go to school. Mm-hmm. So we kind of made it late in the season and a lot of the places had been taken up and we just couldn't find a lot of places to move to, but we were like, we got to do this now. So we go up there and we look around and we find this one place and it's just super dumpy. It's like, it's really gross. And literally the kitchen is so small that you can get in the fridge, close the door, turn around, and the counter's right there for you to just prepare food.
It's convenient.
Yeah, exactly. So definitely it was kind of like, all right, this is kind of what we got to do to get to where we want to go. So I was like, all right. So we put $500 and something down payment on it. And we asked my former husband's name is Mike. Mm-hmm. He had cousins that was going to help us move. So we had this weekend that was really kind of a tight schedule. You know, we needed to move at a specific time. And we expected them to come over. They had said that they would. And nobody showed up on a Saturday. We were calling, just like, I was freaking out. Like, was like, what in the hell are we going to do? And really just kind of fell into that surrender kind of a space, because that's all you can do at that point. So I just prayed and cried a little bit and was like, okay, if I'm supposed to be there, let's just do this. Somehow it's going to happen. If it's not, then fine. So we wake up the next morning and his sister calls. His sister lives 15 minutes from the U of U. She's like, I just got in an argument with my former husband. We've decided to get a divorce. I'm moving back to Hawaii. I was wondering if you can move into my house and take over my house payments for me. And we literally would have signed
on the shitty apartment.
On the shitty apartment with a tiny, tiny kitchen.
Yeah.
And it just synchronistically, it couldn't have been more perfect. It really lined up. And oftentimes when I'm struggling with some kind of trust or faith issue, I'll go back to that experience and I'll be like, okay, I really am taken care of all the time, even if I don't recognize it. Mm-hmm. So I have to kind of relax into that and just kind of allow.
Yeah.
Because sometimes there's things you just can't do.
I always remind myself, because I believe that we are always exactly where we are supposed to be.
Yeah.
So every experience that we're having is something that we are supposed to be having. Mm-hmm. Even when it seems like, because sometimes that synchronistic divinity of the universe and energy and life and everything that kind of spins and guides us through mm-hmm. this experience, I think sometimes we look at it in that negative light too, where it's like, oh my God, all of these things lined up and now I'm in an even shittier spot than I am. Yeah. And why did this happen? But it's really my belief that, like I said, you're always right where you're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And so I try to remind myself that, but there are obviously times when it's difficult and challenging and hard. And right. It's like, I have no idea why I'm supposed to be in this position, but we'll let go as best we can and just watch and see what happens.
Yeah. So that's the hardest part.
Yeah.
Is just the letting go of it. Because you want to figure it out. You want to create a solution. You know, that's your natural instinct. And I think that's good. But to be open, instead of trying to force something to happen, to relax into it. And just be like, okay, I need to be guided. These are my options. What can I do here?
See, and then there's balance too. Because I think sometimes people take that too far, where they're just like, oh, I'm just going to sit back
totally
and let the universe guide me and I'll go where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
And so it's, I that's play
my
that
mom
game,
in a nutshell.
Yeah. Where you're like, you know,
drives
from the outside,
you nuts.
You're like, you're just lazy. Get off your ass and
yeah,
do something.
Right.
No, the universe will tell me when it's time.
Mm-hmm. See, and that's why I said before, you just got to evaluate your options,
mm-hmm.
you know? And just, okay, we need to find a solution.
My wife told me something once, because I always struggle in the space of trying to make those decisions and what's best and connect with your solar plex and your intuition and see what's, you know. And she's like, you can, you know, walk through any door and then just turn around and walk right back out.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason why you make
that's
a decision.
True. Wise woman.
And you're stuck.
Yeah.
She is a wise woman.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's another thing I remind myself all the time. It's like, because I want to be proactive, but then at the same time, I want to allow. And so it's like, well, I can make this decision and then just turn around and make another decision.
Yeah.
So how long have you been on your journey, your path? Like, when did you wake up?
That's a good question. People have asked me that before, and I don't really know what to tell them all the time. Because essentially I feel like waking up is a progression and it's something that happens over like your entire lifetime essentially, but you'll have little blips of it. And then there's one point where it's just like, you'll have a crack you wide open kind of experience, and then you have another one, but then you'll have these other little tiny ones that you're not always aware of or think of. So to answer a question, I remember being young and experiencing a lot of things that I thought were pretty normal, as you typically hear people sometimes say, that I thought it was just like common sense that everybody saw spirits and...
So you've seen stuff your whole life, yeah, for the most part?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I even have memories from in the womb.
Really?
And, yeah. And when I was super tiny, tiny, like one and younger. And the interesting thing, though, is that I have a lot of blocked out memories. So I remember certain times that are like, how in the world could you remember that? But then other ones where it's just like completely gone.
And is it big chunks of time?
Uh-huh.
Like you don't remember age 4 to 5 or stuff like that?
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea why?
I do. I think there's different things that are going on. I think one, it was a coping for me.
I was going to ask, because a lot of times if you have memory like that,
right,
it stems, or a lack of memory, I should say, it stems from trauma.
Right.
Because it'll do stuff to the kind of, like, it is a coping mechanism. It's a survival mechanism.
It is.
And your brain will disassociate and disconnect and literally do different, like, rewiring of synapses and things like that.
Sure.
Just in order for you as a physical person to move through that space and be in that space.
Which I think is really brilliant.
I know.
Of us to be able to do that, because then it allows us to kind of move forward. The only challenge that comes is when it stores itself in our subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And then it pops up as this like fear.
Yeah. Or even like energetically speaking,
right,
where it's all that baggage and shit from the past. And you're like, I don't even remember. I don't have conscious memory of it.
Yeah.
But yet it's still in some way, shape, or form affecting me today.
Right.
And so that's heavy work.
Yeah. Fortunately, there's pros and cons about being able to see the spirit realm or experience the spirit realm, right? As we know. And part of it was I just was taught all along the way how to perceive life in a different way than what seems to be like the norm.
And do you think that, like, when you say you were taught, was it like mom and dad, or was that guidance from?
Guidance from the spirit realm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Guides. And when something would happen, because I'm empathic too, I feel everybody's feelings. I can read their mind. It can, you know, all that stuff that we can do if we tune into it. And some of us are a little bit more sensitive than others, and I'm hypersensitive to it.
Yeah.
So what would happen is if I saw a child, a sibling, or a child at school or something just picking on another person, I could in reality know exactly what was going on in that person that was picking on them. And instead of being angry with them, I'd have a lot of compassion for them, because I could see that they were in pain or feeling powerless, or knowing that there was something more that was going on that would cause them to act that way, which allowed me to view people from their core self, from who they really are, as well as what they've experienced. There are times I have been or could see experiences that they've had, some kind of trauma.
Yeah.
And it's usually really, if it's a really loud, big energy in your energy field where it's like something traumatic, like you were saying, that's usually what would stand out to me the most.
Do you get like the flash of it or something, and then more of it kind of connects and resonates?
It's different in different ways. And sometimes the way that my brain works and the way that my soul works is it's all very, very quick. Mm-hmm. It's like this pure knowing. And it comes in visions, it comes in feeling, it comes in as if I was that person at that time.
Yeah.
Experiencing it.
See, that's a hard thing, because a lot of times when we talk to people about all of this shit, whether it's spirituality or energy work or spirit, I mean, just the whole realm of all of this stuff that you and I are both into, and we know a bunch of people that are into it. And I think that, I mean, because you're the type of person, you're like me, where this is just the way that you move through life. It doesn't necessarily define you like anything else.
Right.
It's just who you are. You've embraced it. But it's hard to explain sometimes, especially to people who you know, may view it in a certain way or specific kind of idea or conception or stereotype associated with it. Because when you do feel stuff or you see stuff or you experience stuff, it covers like the whole gamut of things.
Yeah.
And so you're like, I'm doing the best that I can to interpret what this is today.
Yeah, but
it's exactly. Crazy stuff.
And sometimes, especially when I was younger, it was hard to decipher what was mine and what wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Do you still struggle with that, you think?
I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's one of those things that, because the way you described kind of awakening or kind of coming into your own space, falling into it, where it's a progression, where sometimes you'll have something that's really big and then a series of things. And
yeah.
I think it's the same thing when you're trying to understand and embrace your natural gifts that everybody has, mm-hmm. where you're like, you know, is this mine or is this somebody else's?
Yeah, truth is, it doesn't matter.
Exactly. It's all our stuff.
It doesn't matter if it's somebody else's or not. And something I found too from what the spirit realm is teaching me as well is be grateful to experience other people's stuff, because not only does it allow you to have compassion on people around you, but what it actually does is it acts as a catalyst to help uproot whatever's inside of you that you need to release. That you've been holding on to for a substantial amount of time.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
That happens all the time, I think.
Yeah. It's still, I mean, I recognize that I do deserve to be like a lot more grounded, a lot more solid, and a lot more clear in my life in order for me to not just walk around as a sponge all day long.
All day long.
Yeah. Because it can get pretty overwhelming, especially when we were doing the psychic fair. You know, I remember meeting you there. I would go home with everybody's pains and struggles and frustrations.
Yeah.
And it would take me a good week just to recover. And really a good month. But that first week was just pretty challenging. And that wasn't healthy for me, which is why I kind of pulled away from it for a while.
I was going to ask you because... I mean, I think when we first met each other, it was one of the soul works probably last year or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of did fade off and you stopped doing them and different things. Mm-hmm. Was it just a matter of, it is challenging to be in that space of working with other people's stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, was that what it was? Just a matter of...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was the bottom line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's hard. It.
Yeah, that, and I was experiencing my own... upheaval of trauma from my childhood and past life stuff.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
2015.
Yeah.
It was a big shitty year.
It was that kind of year.
Yeah. Everybody I talked to, it was like huge life altering, changing kind of, whether it was in the physical sense of like job loss or divorce or huge life changes. And then it was a big year for a lot of different people.
I got to say though, it was kind of a skimmer for me in comparison to a lot of years previous to that. So
was it easier in the years previous? Well,
I wouldn't use the word easy, but I would use the word
less severe,
less growth.
Yeah.
I don't know, something like that.
Yeah, how's this year for you?
Well, I gotta be honest, this is really kind of sticking out to me right now. In all reality, you know, we're talking about relaxing into having a lot of trust. We're talking about being really clear and having these guidance from spirit realm and stuff like that. But in all reality, like I'm just as human as anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I bitch and moan. And sometimes I cuss out the spirit realm. I'm just like, what in the hell is going on here? Like, this is not okay with me.
Yeah.
You know, so I just wanted to make that clear that it's like, life is about experience. It's not just about like, you know, spirituality to me ultimately comes down to allowing yourself to realize that you're experiencing this world for a reason and that it's here to teach us and to enjoy it and enjoy the hell.
Yeah, all aspects.
Yeah, because it's not going to last.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to last. And to, you know, we as spiritual minded people oftentimes try to pull ourselves out of this world or to relate to the spirit realm a lot more than the physical realm. And I think it's an ebb and flow.
I do too.
I think there's times where we're supposed to be there and other times where we're supposed to just pull ourselves back into ourselves and just take what we learned and walk with it.
Mm-hmm.
And walk the talk that we actually learn.
Yeah, I try to embrace everything, whether it's stuff that we talk to other people about, like if we're working with a client or somebody like that. I typically, you know, I won't necessarily, when I say preach something, it's not like we're out there preaching by any means, but I won't, you know, be a proponent of something, or I won't recommend something, or I won't talk about something unless it's something that we try to do and practice all the time.
Yeah.
But I think you make a good point where I think so many times you have all of these, like, all these big, amazing people that are out there in the realm of spirituality and, do you know what I mean? Like the gurus and the people that are, when I say famous, I don't think necessarily famous, but well known.
Right.
And they do amazing things and all that kind of stuff. And I think sometimes they put on that, oh, like that air of bullshit that they're all just airy and fairy and light. And it's all about meditation and mantras and shit. And that stuff's beautiful and it's amazing. And it's how you can really find inner peace and balance. Mm-hmm. But everybody's still human as well.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, they probably take that off and go home and like throw their feet up and watch TV just like everybody else. They're going to binge watch something on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we have to remember that. And I embrace aspects of that in my own self where, you know, there's some days where I am just pissed off and I'm grumpy and it's the universe is upsetting me. And by God, the moon is in some cycle or rotation and phase that is just
like, here you go, whack. Yeah.
But it's balance in all things. And for me, I think the most important thing or the most important thing for me to remember in my own space is life is a practice.
Mm-hmm.
And we're always practicing and we always have opportunity to practice.
Yeah.
So it's not something that I'm ever going to perfect because perfection is just kind of a silly thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just always get to practice it.
Right. So it's like a refining.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like the word practice just because it doesn't put you in a state of status.
Yeah.
It kind of puts you in alignment with everybody's like working on.
Everybody's working.
Yeah.
And it gets, for me, it gets rid of the idea or the concept of failure.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like you would embrace, we'll just use meditation, for example. I started to practice meditation and I started to try to incorporate it into my life and I started to try to do it more and more.
Mm-hmm.
And there were times that I would get done and I'd feel like a failure because I didn't feel like I did anything or it wasn't benefiting me or, you know, and then I'd have weeks where I wouldn't do it and it realize that, well, I'm not failing at it. I'm just practicing meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And once I kind of stepped outside of that, then it got much easier and more connection and
you
all
didn't
that kind
try
of
to
stuff.
Push it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, oh, Hawaii. Didn't you live in Hawaii for a short time?
I did.
Tell
a couple
me about
times.
That. Why the hell did you move to, or are you originally from Utah?
Yeah.
So
I
what
was
took
born
you out to
in
Hawaii?
Salt Lake City. Well, at the time, you know, when I was really young, I remember being about 4 or 5 years old and having just immaculate visions and dreams where I would wake up in the morning, I'd run upstairs and I'd go and sit at the table and eat my breakfast and sit there and describe for my mom for like 2 hours or more, just like what I experienced and what I saw. And I remember seeing Hawaii all the time. And I remember I didn't really have the comprehension at that time what Hawaii was exactly.
In your mind back then, were you thinking that it was Hawaii or just this really cool tropical place?
Like, it was just a beautiful place
beautiful
that I
place.
Felt safe and good. And it felt like love. And what had happened was I was watching TV with my dad one time and a commercial comes on and there's Hawaii and I get elated. I jump up on the bed and I'm just like so excited. I'm like, that's my dream. That's my dream. I had a dream about that. And so when I got older, it's something I'd always been drawn to. And now that I know what I know, I understood that it was Lemuria.
Yeah.
And that I had lived lifetimes there. And I had really deep-rooted pain associated with those or that lifetime, that this one specific lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so strong that it always pulled me to Hawaii. And let's see. So when I was 16, I ended up dating a guy that I had a child with. And I placed that child for adoption. He actually was from Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
So I almost moved to Hawaii with him and got married. And then I knew it wasn't the right thing for me to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hardest thing I ever went through
I can that imagine.
Time in my life.
Especially at like 16, 17 years old.
Right. And, you know, some of us don't like to learn right away. So what had happened was I placed him for adoption. Sorry, it's still a little bit emotional sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
I ended up, you know, distancing myself from the father, and then somehow he just showed up at my school when I was a senior.
Mm-hmm.
And we reconnected through the pain of the loss of our child. I ended up getting pregnant again.
By the same guy?
Same. And placed him, or excuse me, placed my daughter for adoption with the same family. So they're together.
Oh.
Yeah. And I have contact with him now. But as far as Hawaii goes, I almost went there.
I'm so sorry. I was thinking, shit, Hawaii's cool. Let's talk about Hawaii.
No, it's okay.
Yeah.
I'm really open, so
yeah.
No worries. And then after that, I ended up marrying a half Tongan guy from Hawaii as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we had 5 children together, like I was saying. We moved down there for a while and lived there for, I don't even know for how long, but we lived there and it felt like home.
Yeah.
Like the home I'd always felt like I wanted to feel. You know, the same kind of feeling I would get when I go into the mountains here in Utah. Just some place that was just kind of away from everything.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like home. So when I went through my divorce, I actually went down there for 3 weeks to heal.
Back to Hawaii?
Mm-hmm. So I've been there 3 different times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the, like, when you guys were living there, how long? You say you don't even really know how long you lived
right?
there. But
it was maybe a year-ish.
Mm-hmm.
But we lived there, you know, before we were married. So we moved down there, moved back up here, moved down there.
Yeah. So, think you'll ever go back?
Of course. Yeah. So, which brings me into this next thing that really is kind of standing out to me to talk about, which is essentially it's like a oneness center that I'm super excited about. Because what I've seen for years and years and years is that there would almost be places that would be built that would be central hub for people to go and gather.
Uh-huh.
And I saw this, you know, I had this vision where I had kind of floated above the earth kind of a thing. And then I saw this spider web of little centers spotted all over the earth, but they were connected.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some people call them light cities. Some people call them all kinds of different things. But I knew that one of them would be there.
In Hawaii.
Right. So I feel very connected to being there, and I feel like there's going to be, you know, people that start them up all over the place, but that essentially they would be connected in some way.
I think, isn't there like concepts and theories and ideas that's kind of how some of those ancient cultures existed, where they had civilizations that were on opposite sides of the planet, but yet mm-hmm. somehow were still connected and still kind of being, you know, in the space of being able to,
yeah,
not just be connected energetically, but also kind of communicate and work with right. each other. And so that's why you find
you're talking about
things.
Like pyramids. And
yeah, that those are really energy centers, you know, back during that time period. Like you talked about Shasta being one, now being kind of the root of the planet at this
right.
point.
Nodal point,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And so there were other, because obviously everything shifts and changes and evolves right. on our planet. So back in the day, you know, and this is crazy concepts. When I say crazy, not like it's out there and bizarre, but it's so dense and it's stuff I like thinking about and kind of getting lost in. But then at yeah. the same time, you're like, I don't know. In the end, I just don't know. Mm-hmm. But it makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, and it makes sense that we would kind of not just recreate that, but that that would happen again in some form or fashion.
Mm-hmm. It feels like it's going to be a lot more practical than it seems. Like mm-hmm. a lot of people get into this, like, you know, sounding like it's this far off thing. But in reality, there's those kinds of places all over the planet in various countries and things already.
Yeah.
You know, India has some. Fiji, you know, they're just speckled everywhere. And I think people aren't as aware of them. But I think it's going to be one of those things that there's going to be a time where, you know, there's going to be more built to the point where it is more of a place that's like a central place that people come.
Yeah.
For all kinds of things.
Do you think you'll still be here to see it?
Meeting. Yeah. Most definitely. So? Yeah. Meeting our star family. Meeting our inner earth family.
Mm-hmm.
Also a place that people, you know, they're really kind of involved in what we are interested in, spirituality and whatnot. I think it's a gathering place.
For everybody to kind of get together, like-minded people.
Yeah, for like, you know, some people think like group meditations or prayer circles or it could, you know, it could have anything. Sweat lodges, as far as it's got to be run by somebody who knows what they're doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I feel like it's going to be more of a place that you both gather, but also a place that you learn. Like, I've seen dorms in these places, and I've seen like greenhouses there mm-hmm. where people actually learn how to heal the earth through its own ecosystem. I saw mushrooms there at one point and saw that they were part of purifying the earth again.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was just a central hub for learning, gathering, connecting, all that kind of thing.
So. And there'll be one in Hawaii.
Yes.
What a better place. You can't have a better place than that. I've never been.
No.
Yeah. It's one of those places that I'm sure I'll visit one day, but
yeah,
it's on that list.
Yeah, it's some people consider it to be the heart chakra of the earth, or at least it was at one point.
Mm-hmm.
So
they do a lot of like because there's, I'm going to do terrible because I'm not going to have specific names or anywhere that anybody can go and actually find this information. So I'm really just pulling it out of my ass. But mm-hmm. there's groups that'll meet up around in different locations on the planet mm-hmm. and do kind of ginormous ceremonies in regards to balancing the energy of the planet. And there's supposed to be a lot of really obviously energy in Hawaii, but also crystalline energy in connection to kind of like the crystal grid of the planet and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think recently they did one of those in Hawaii where they met and basically worked on the crystal grid for the planet and things like that.
Yeah.
And
beautiful.
Yeah. But those are, when I say those are crazy concepts, so tell me how, cause you, you're probably one of those people. Well, I shouldn't say you're probably, I dropped my rocks. I got to pick my rock up. You're one of those people. Ugh, see, that sounds terrible. You're not one of those people. You're just a person. You're a normal person.
Just talk like you would to me.
But you think about crazy shit and you believe in crazy shit. So I want to talk about some of that crazy shit that you believe in.
I question all the crazy shit I see. Because
I see you post stuff on Facebook sometimes, and Facebook's wonderful and it's amazing. But then at the same time, I think that it's such a silly way to communicate with people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also beneficial.
Right.
But some of those, I want to talk to you about conspiracy theories.
Okay.
And I was thinking about this the other day too. Like, I'm a skeptic of conspiracy theories,
mm-hmm.
but in the same sense, there's space for anything and everything to be true and to be real. But share with, like, what's one of the crazy ones that you're thinking right now or that you're kind of into?
Well, anything that I do post on Facebook, it's with the idea of that I'm sharing this as a possibility.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes when I share things, it's not always with this, oh, I believe this to be 100% true, and you better believe what I believe kind of a thing. It's more like, whoa, look at this. This might affect us. This is interesting. We should maybe look into this or at least know about it.
Give somebody the idea or the concept, just stretch them outside of what's normal.
Right.
Or accepted to be normal, I should say.
Right. And that's kind of a can of worms, I gotta say, for you to ask that question, because the more I research, the more recollection I have inside of me from my past experiences.
So this
explains a lot.
Explains a lot of that kind of stuff.
Right.
So we're going to get into weird, bizarre conversation here.
Okay.
Because you reference past lives. Tell me your belief or your idea surrounding the concept and idea of past lives.
Okay.
Just start there.
Yeah. Good question. It sounds complex, but when I've seen it in vision form, it's actually not as complex as you would think it would be. And the way that I've seen it is actually in kind of like that we're existing in like a giant computer, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And that we're all these little computer, mini computers, right? So it looks like an orb to me, like a giant orb. Like a circular thing. And when we experience space and time, it looks like it's in spiral layers within this orb. So there's possibilities of the future. Actually, I could describe it this way. The ancients used to describe it as like a cross, like a plus sign cross with a circle around it. And when I've had these visions about this, on the perpendicular line, there's like to the left, there's the past. To the right, there's the future.
Mm-hmm.
And below, on the line that goes up and down, there is, below it is the lower self or the ego self. And above it is the higher self. Or you could also interpret that as like the future self or the past self. So for instance, like we come from the past, right? So how do I almost need to like draw it out to explain it.
I was trying to explain my concept to my daughter the other day and I totally had to draw it.
Yeah.
I'm like, it just makes sense.
Should see my house. It's just like speckled with little drawings where I'm trying to teach my kids or people that come over these little concepts that I've learned. But essentially, so let me get back to trying to explain this, but so as my daughter's gonna laugh if she ever listens to this, because whenever I get into conversation, always it always goes back to at the beginning of the universe. Sorry.
When time began.
Yeah. When this universe began, it came from this central sun like energy field is what I saw. And what I saw was each ray as its own universe. And our universe was a spiral one. It spiraled out. And it made me curious as to why that was and what that was all about and stuff. So I started asking a lot of questions. So, geez, you know what?
See, it's so convoluted.
No, this is like, I could go on in 50 different directions here. I could tell you that I feel like we're living in a womb, that we're literally, like, not literally, but we're in some way living in a womb-like state of this divine feminine masculine energy, where, like, okay, I'm going to have to back up just a little bit.
Rewind.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to go back to the spiral. So we spiral down into this universe. And as we spiral further away from source, we're, you know, separated in some way. And how that occurred is like little black holes in the universe are actually entrance exit ways to source or to different universes is what I was shown. And that... that is actually almost like it's a birth canal. So we're in this universe that's like, you know, circular in nature, like just a big, I don't know what you would call it, like a sphere in nature, existing here, developing, learning, and growing. And as far as this being literal, I don't really know about that. I don't actually care about that part. What I care about is why I'm here, what I'm doing, what the purpose of it is. So when I explain these things, it sounds really far out there and far-fetched, but at the same time, it's just the divine's way to help me understand things that I need to see in order for me to progress where I'm at right now.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So a couple different things. Mm-hmm. First off, because I had this thought as you're sitting here talking about it. So many different times we try to come up with the meaning of life, the reason mm-hmm. why we're here, right? And right. explain away the existence of this experience so mm-hmm. that we kind of have parameters to place it in. And there's a lot of commonalities across not just religion and spirituality, but people in general. A lot of times, so like me and you, for example, we have similar belief systems in a sense and in a way, but the way that you describe it, I can resonate and connect with to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. But then my experiences through meditation or dreams or visions and things like that is slightly different. And so it's mm-hmm. kind of like the same color, just a different shade. Mm-hmm. And I think we get caught up in trying to, well, mine is going to be more accurate
more right.
than yours.
Right.
Or someone else is going to be like, well, I have the mm-hmm. true meaning of the existence of man and why we're on this planet.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, there's obviously a possibility, anything's possible, but wouldn't it be neat if, so your experience is slightly different in a different shade than mine,
yeah.
but it's 100% true.
Yeah.
And mine is 100% true. Uh-huh. And the 7.5 billion people on the planet and what they perceive is 100% true.
Yeah.
Because the universe is big enough to hold space for all of those things to exist.
Yeah.
So when we die, I think this happens. And maybe that's exactly what happens to me when I die. And you have this experience. But because we're so similar in a sense, just as humans... Mm-hmm. then they're always kind of similar and they have the same shade and we'll cross yeah. paths even after this life and different things. And I don't know. It's just crazy, yeah. bizarre stuff.
To me, it's not necessarily about getting caught up in the story of it. Mm-hmm. Not the stories are bad because they're teachers, right?
Yeah.
But it's more about what you learn from it. And it's not about the messenger. It's about the message, mm-hmm. right? Like if you think about life and its experiences, it's about... essentially everything is there to support you in your growth and how you view it or how the universe presents it to you is very individualized, like you were saying. And yes, it doesn't make it right or wrong necessarily, but it's very some people feel like their explanation of what they experience, it being very similar to someone else's, seems to be like, oh, maybe you're more closer to the truth of it all. And when I say the truth, like what you're meant to get out of it all.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying by that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I had another thing.
Yeah.
Because I got lost on that. That was popping into my head as you were talking.
Sure.
But past life specifically.
Okay.
Because you described a lot of things.
I know. I went out there, didn't I?
But this idea of past and future, that concept just doesn't make sense to me. And right. it used to, you know, but it doesn't make sense to me now. And so if everything's now and if everything's, you know, we're mindful and we're being present in the moment, yeah. we're here... then how the fuck is there a past and
how the hell is there a future? You're making me laugh about this. So I'm going to go back to this cross type uh-huh. thing we were talking about.
Because that's what you described. You described, you know, yeah. the past and the future and your uh-huh. higher self and everything like that.
Yeah. Okay. So to get back to that, just to answer your question.
We should have a caveat too. Like this is totally just your belief and my belief.
Yeah.
This isn't dogma from something.
Whatever, I'm right. You know what? Just kidding. So, all right, we're going to go back to the ancients, right? Mm-hmm. Ancient wisdom. And what they show is there are so many different dimensions and so many different parallel realities based off of what we're experiencing now vibrationally as a collective.
Yes.
So, having that been said, we're experiencing many different lifetimes simultaneously. So when I say past life, we could, you know, what's in the now, mm-hmm. like you were describing, it's just in a different space and time.
a different dimension
area. You also, I know this to be true, is that I feel like it influences me regularly.
Mm-hmm.
That space and time reality, those other space and time realities, I can feel whatever is going on in that one sometimes affecting me in this one.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to challenge you, because yes, you referenced the ancients from the past.
Mm-hmm.
So are they just existing at the exact same moment that we're here now in some other dimension and realm?
Well, when I was describing the orb,
uh-huh.
Yes, it's like all in it together. It's like all of the layers of this spiral reality, past, present, future, is all in this moment. And we choose where to be at any given time vibrationally. But we also have to understand it's a collective, because we're all essentially this one
big source of energy.
We're just kind of like speckled into little different aspects of it. So
okay, so that's really similar to what I believe.
Okay,
that's really, really close. That really kind of,
that means we're right,
aligned. I think we've nailed it. We're definitely,
we got the answer.
We're more righter than the other people out there.
But, I won't say that, but
I want to challenge it, because so in that case, like, we have to stop referencing them as past lives.
Yeah,
like, I want to do away with that shit. We have to get rid of
it. We have no other context to it. What would you call it?
We just explained a beautiful context.
Multiple reality?
A different dimensional existence? I don't know. We, you know, have mm-hmm. to brainstorm and come up with something. But I get kind of like, because the fact is, I don't think they're past lives. You described it really beautifully. And this is kind of how I described it the other day to my daughter. So I see kind of those orbs, but I don't think of, I think everybody, so I have an orb.
Okay. Yeah.
That's my sphere.
Yeah.
And it's not just my existence right now. It's all of my energy existences all across the different dimensions and space and times. And that's my orb. And then somebody else will, you know, everybody has their kind of orb or whatever you want to call it, sphere. I like sphere better than orb. Mm-hmm. Orb sounds kind of too fairy and airy and weird out there, but everybody's got their own sphere of energy, and they're just all bouncing around kind of chaotically and haphazardly, even though there's kind of a sacred geometry aspect of it.
Yes, most definitely.
And then when those kind of bump into each other and align, that's why we'll experience like deja vu or something like that. Mm-hmm. Or you meet somebody and you have this knowingness of like, God, I sure, you know, like we've met before.
Yeah.
I just feel connected to this person or something. And it's because your orbs are colliding into each other. Mm-hmm. And there's like two intersecting points when that happens. It's easy to think of them in the one dimensional as like a circle. Mm-hmm. But then when you expand outside and think of them in that three-dimensional state of like a sphere.
Yeah.
But there's two connecting points when those things meet. The point right now in this existence in time when we're meeting. And then the other point kind of, and that's the experience of like deja vu or recognizing that mm-hmm. you know this person.
The recollection, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I think at the same time too, in that sphere and in that space of all of my existences all around in the different dimensions, they will, for some reason, see, we need like a visual aid.
Yeah, we do.
We need a PowerPoint to explain this. But mm-hmm. when those orbs connect and resonate, and we'll have some sort of like event or something that'll happen, you'll have what we'll label, because we're going to do away with past lives. We're not going to label them anymore. You'll have a memory or an experience, because even memory insinuates something in the past. This is challenging. We got to come up with the right words. You'll have a connection with some other source of energy that is yours.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, because you describe it, I'm getting lost in my words and rambling.
But. Yeah, I understand. And I'm going to be totally honest with you. I feel like we get in our heads too much about it. And I feel like when you're talking about it, you're all up in your head about it.
See, that's a really nice way for you to deal. You're like, Craig, you're just a jackass. You got to stop thinking about this stuff.
I didn't say that. But yeah, like we get caught up in what is it really doing and what's going on? That's totally irrelevant.
Yeah.
Like completely irrelevant. It doesn't matter. I mean, in all reality, if I see that I'm Cleopatra in a past lifetime, I don't want to say that it doesn't matter necessarily,
mm-hmm.
but, and I'm not saying I'm Cleopatra, please don't like say that, don't quote me on that, but What I'm saying is the strengths and weaknesses that were learned and achieved in that lifetime or experienced in that lifetime is relevant to me today.
Yeah.
In the now. And that it doesn't really matter who, like I was saying, it's not about the messenger or whatever. It's about the message.
Mm-hmm.
What are we here to experience? So a lot of people will come to me and ask for past life readings, and I'm happy to do that. But at the same time, I do this disclaimer where I'm like, look, like you have to understand that even if we're going to talk about a past life, we're going to be talking about what you're meant to be learning in that experience or what you achieved as far as like going through all of that or what karmically, quote unquote, you're experiencing in this lifetime having to do with that one.
Yeah.
And that's the only purpose of even acknowledging a past life. I won't say the only, but it's the big one.
Yeah.
Because if we're talking about things happening simultaneously as far as time goes, we have the ability to influence those other lifetimes based off of what we learn here.
See, that's what I was going to say, because that's the whole thing. Like you go a little bit further into it where Cleopatra is having a past life experience of some chick that's driving a car, living in this weird place that she doesn't really understand that looks kind of familiar, but she's gleaming information and insight and strength from what you're going through right now.
Mm-hmm. I do have an experience with that I can share that keeps popping up. And three times a number. If I see things three times or hear things three times, I'm like, okay, I get it. Like, let's just say it already. So now I honestly don't know what inspired this, but about, I want to say 8, 9, 10 years ago, I was living at this one house in Provo. And when I was there, I just all of a sudden one day just got inspired to go get my mini trampoline that was in my room, went and grabbed it. I layered myself up in like 5 or 6 layers of clothing, thermal stuff, like wool socks, heavy coats, hat, the whole bit. Okay. Yeah. This was June 2nd. No air conditioning in my house. I didn't have it on, let's just say that. And I jumped on the trampoline for 2 hours straight wearing this. And you might say that sounds pretty insane, but I don't really care, to be honest with you. And why I felt inspired to do that, I don't know. It doesn't matter. But what happened in that experience was I went into this really intense trance-like state. And when I was there, like an hour into it, I was feeling so good. Like, I was feeling amazing. I wasn't feeling like the heat of it all. I mean, I had to push through the whole thing, right? But what happened about the halfway mark, I started having this really intense vision of a monk. It was a male monk. And he started communicating with me.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in deep meditation because I could see him, but he wasn't talking, but he was communicating with me. And everything he was communicating with me was exactly what I needed to hear at the time. And I was really, really wanting to have some kind of a teacher or somebody to guide me in what I was experiencing, because everything was so just like, I don't know what the world is going on here. Nobody can explain anything to me. This was before I was even on the internet and people talked about auras and chakras and all that kind of stuff. All I knew is what I saw and what I experienced. And so when I saw this being and he's teaching me all this stuff, excuse me, I felt like it was me in a past life. And if you really want to go to that place of being like, well, let's challenge this, which is totally like relevant to
that's
do that.
That's what I'm all about.
Yeah. Why can't we just acknowledge or see or say that since we're all connected and since our orb that you were describing has experiences in different realities, then we can experience ourselves in those other realities at the time. And it's really about what we're experiencing to learn and grow, transcend, master.
Yeah.
Is another word for it.
See, it'd be so neat to think about, it'd be so neat to talk to that monk.
Yeah.
And hear about his experience. He's like, one day I was in this super deep meditation and I'd been there for like 4 hours.
It was the Eskimo lady.
Yeah, it was so amazing. And then out of nowhere, this lady started talking to me and she was jumping up and down and it was so strange, but
yeah,
that's cool.
You want to hear something funny about that? Is because I was aware of him being super conscious of me.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't seem to faze him, almost as if he had seen all kinds of really interesting, weird things.
But see, in that space, before, it didn't faze you until you kind of came out of it, in a sense. Like when you're in that really deep meditative trance space, you see crazy shit.
But it's so common for me to experience that it wasn't unusual. Like when I experienced it, I was like, wow, I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah.
This is amazing. But it wasn't like, I am saved, I'm arrived, I'm a monk in a past life, and I have all the answers. Yeah, I'm just gonna like become celibate and lock myself away in a cave, you know, which there is like an important reason why people do that. I mean,
for the individual, I see there's so weird.
They're maintaining the vibration of the planet in a lot of ways.
I think we all maintain the vibration of the planet.
I think so too, but I think they've maintained it in a way when people have been super hyper and conscious.
Yeah.
And yeah.
See, I think I've talked about this on the show before too, but my theory, one of the many theories of shit that I throw into the air and kind of play with in my own head, is the reason for this existence here is I'm getting tongue-tied. This existence, this planet, this experience, this thing that we call life right here on Earth was created by us, because we all stem from this same big ball of light, source of energy bullshit. We create this experience here because this experience feeds the greater source of energy. Mm-hmm. So all the energy that we create here really just goes back to that source and continues its
spin. Helps us all as one to expand.
And the reason this experience is kind of unique and we have these bodies and all this kind of stuff is because emotion and the vast amount of emotion that we exist, but that we feel and process on this planet, both good and bad, we get the whole spectrum all the time. So even when there's time periods in history when it was really kind of war-torn and negative and all of these things were happening, there were still massive amounts of emotion being processed and felt. And therefore, that energy still, because in the end, it's just energy for me. It's just love.
Of course.
It doesn't matter if it's good or bad. So that's one theory, is I think it's just we're just a factory of energy, and the emotion is what kind of fuels that fire.
Yeah, I think so too. So since we are talking about this, something that came to mind based off of what you were saying was like going back to this cross. They were describing what I was shown in it is that as we transmute, overcome, master whatever energy we're holding on to as a result of our past, whether it's this lifetime or a different lifetime or ancestral or whatever, you know, that's stored in our body, our energy, our cells, that as we transmute it from unconsciousness back into light or wisdom or source, what that does is it dissolves a possible future. So you're dissolving a past experience as if it never happened, because it's not in your energy field. It's gone. You're only living in the now. And that sounds like really out there kind of thing. But if you really set into this kind of concept, what happens is the more you overcome those things, and the biggest key to doing it, three of the biggest keys to doing it, is forgiveness. Forgiveness meaning letting go, holding on to it, not identifying with it, not analyzing it, not creating a negative story. I mean, we have stories that can make us greater or make us stronger, or we have stories that can keep us in stuckness or victimization. So every time we dissolve something from a past experience, we dissolve a negative possible future. So what's happening at this time with this cross thing that I'm describing to you is we're dissolving the past or past realities or past dimensions. Mm-hmm. And we're dissolving the future to come down to more of a central point, or what some of the ancients call is the middle way, or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, there's no real word for it, but you get what I'm saying, right? Uh-huh. And as we're doing this, part of transmuting and dissolving this involves the other aspect of the cross, which is the line that goes up and down, the higher and the lower self, or the past or the future self. So what I mean by that is the more we forgive ourselves, forgive our ancestors, forgive whatever experiences, or let go of those things as holding us back from who we're meant to truly be or who we really are. We're basically letting go of who we are not in order for us to find who we really are. And as we listen to source, spirit, higher self, people call it all different things, as we listen to that inner self or that core of ourself, that authentic aspect of who we are, we can actually dissolve and merge not only the ego, the lower self, the lower realities and lower dimensions will start to dissolve and have no more influence on us the more we master it. Like Native Americans tell a story about a white wolf and a dark wolf.
Uh-huh.
You know that story where whatever wolf you feed is what has more strength and power over you, right?
That's one of my favorites.
Isn't it great?
Yeah.
It's like, it's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So the more you listen to that higher self or feed that white wolf, the more you'll tame that lower aspect of you, and it won't have power over you. So how the lower self has power over you is basically through the five senses in some way. So mastering like lust, mastering just the five senses in some way, the body in some way.
Yeah.
And not giving into all of its desires necessarily. And it's not that those desires are bad or wrong or to be judged whatsoever. It's actually part of the beauty of this experience. A lot of people say it's the shadow self, but you don't want to feed the shadow self. You want to understand it, value it, respect it, and let it be your teacher. And allow it to make you stronger. You know what I'm saying by that? So, you know, I get really worked up about this emotionally. I do. And I start cussing up a storm when I'm thinking about this. And I get super like passionate about it. I'm like, New Age people are retarded. They just don't know what the hell they're doing and talking about. And they're like, oh, well, we're not in religion anymore. We can do everything opposite of what our religion taught us, or our society says we should be this way. Let's just do the opposite of what our society says we should do. I'm sorry, but that's a really immature way of experiencing life if you really want to get the fullness out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing, it's not to say that going into those experiences is bad or wrong, because sometimes that's where you get some of your most revealing aha moments, when you've really just sitting in the gutter or at the bottom of your hole,
yeah,
which is beautiful. But at the same time, like you don't necessarily have to go that dark or that deep into suffering in order for you to master something. And if you do, then like that's part of what you wanted to experience. So in order for you to get back to a place where you're not experiencing as much suffering as you're just like, okay, I'm done with this stuff. No, thank you. You can equate it to somebody with an addiction of some kind. you're like, oh, well, I'm an adult now. I'm 21. I can go drinking all I want. Well, yeah. Some people end up being alcoholics and some don't. But sometimes when you get drunk, you do a lot of things that you normally wouldn't do. Or, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, within reason, you know, it's not like, oh, I can't ever drink alcohol my whole life. I can't do it. You don't look at something like you're judging or pushing it away. That's like pushing away your shadow side or your ego. What you do is you just value the experience that it has to teach you and show you. And you can choose to do that or not. And so my biggest pet peeve and one of the biggest epidemics I feel like is going on right now is people are completely out of control when it comes to sex, sacred sexuality, and all that type of stuff. Hypersexuality. And why I say that is because there's a deeper knowing in me that understands that sexual energy is some of the most powerful energy in our universe. And it could be used for pure creation, and or it could be used for pure destruction in some ways.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Everything has that.
Create and destroy.
Right. Everything is a double-edged sword. And so a lot of people are like, oh, just like give in to your lustful desires and your whatever. And that ends up really just destroying somebody emotionally, energetically, those types of things. It's mm-hmm. just really hard on a person. So to be able to experience things is totally somebody's prerogative and something to not judge in yourself or others. But it's also something to stop and think about, like, what do I want to create in my life? Do I want to, like, let my dark wolf or my body or my desires overcome everything that I am as a soul? And like, one of my things is like, it's heartbreaking for me to see that when another human being lusts or looks at another human being as somebody to like take from, lust to me is take, where love is wanting to share something with someone.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So to me, that's like one of the biggest things that is like screaming at me right now as far as what I have to talk about and teach in general. And it's not to say that some people that are doing sacred sexuality are wrong. I'm not saying that either. But I'm saying some people are putting the label of like sacred sexuality or tantra or will take like pictures, nude pictures and stuff like that, and just flaunt that. And what I want to say about that is that it's not that that's bad or wrong, but where you're coming from energetically, are you coming from that shadow side? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, the dark wolf
that wants power, that wants to feel empowered, that wants the attention, that wants the whatever. Because mm-hmm. anything that you put out there is going to give you energy back. So if you have an intention of putting something out there, let's use Facebook as a forum, just because that's like
kind of one of a big forum out
right.
there.
Right. So somebody posts something on Facebook, people are going to automatically just having opinions right and left about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Either like, whoa, or oh my gosh, or no, or, you know, it brings up emotions. That's why I think technology and social media is so addicting, is because it forces our emotions to arise and it creates a safe, quote unquote, environment for us to be able to experience that.
Yeah.
When in our daily lives, we're just walking around feeling numb. It's kind of like a fix.
For sure.
So I know it's been for me. Don't tell anyone that I said that, though.
It's okay. We'll cut that part out.
Okay, good.
So, God, my brain hurts. That's when I know that it's like this good conversation, because it expands and it stretches and it's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
My brain hurts.
Yeah.
But we do have to talk about your jewelry.
Okay.
So not just your opportunity to throw your shit out there, because you have an Etsy shop, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we got listeners all over the world, so somebody's gonna be able to go on and look at your stuff and find your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But talk to me a little bit about first, like, how long have you been creating that stuff? How did you kind of come to it? Everything like that.
Good question. Yeah, my jewelry. Where to begin?
How long have you been making it?
I don't know, since I was younger. I'm an artist, so I have just always found something to put some creative energy into.
Uh-huh.
So when I was a teenager, my dad, he's a mountain man, you know, we had a teepee growing up and we'd go to mountain man rendezvous and whatnot. And he'd take me to this guy that had giant boxes of beads and beads and beads and beads, and he'd let us pick it out as kids. So I started accumulating and gathering beads and trinkets and those types of things when I was younger. When I was a little bit older, I started using my jewelry as a means to be able to be at home with my kids and still be able to do something to be creative and also make money.
Uh-huh.
And to me, I've always been the kind of person that anything I do in my life needs to have some kind of meaning, has to have some kind of a higher purpose. So I really, really pulled away from jewelry for a long time because to me it just felt insignificant. And it felt like, you know, I this is not really meaningful to anything in the bigger picture of life. But the more I prayed for a way to for me to be able to make money and be at home and be creative and somehow influence the world in a positive way through the energy of crystals and whatnot, I began to work with it. So I began to collect stones and jewelry and those types of like jewelry making trinkets, like cord, etc., beads, over the years. And I started to wire wrap and all that kind of thing that people sometimes try to practice. And eventually, about 2 years ago, my boyfriend went down to Mexico and he came home with macrame, a necklace for me made of macrame. I had no idea what macrame was.
Yeah.
You know, like people nowadays that see it, it's like, oh my gosh, I remember when that was like such a popular thing. I made some pot holders for somebody, you know, and uh-huh. they just, and I'm like, it's new to me. Like I didn't, you know, I'm 37 years old and still new. Like, so anyway, I started to do it. And what was happening as I would do it is like, I'm a channeler. So I began to channel energy and beings and shapes and geometric patterns and those types of things, and it started actually coming out into my jewelry. And so every piece that I make, I know is for someone specific, even if I don't know for who.
Yeah.
And it's very unique to that person. And it's like what I do nowadays is I will actually just pray usually, or sometimes I will just like feel drawn to a stone or something and I'll start making it, and it will like start coming out as like something I never expected.
Yeah.
You know? So that's mainly how that came about.
It's beautiful stuff.
Thank you.
It's super amazing stuff. Tell me where can people go and find it? What's your Etsy shop?
It's Immortal Jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
Like Immortal Jewelry. On Etsy. And Etsy's kind of temperamental. It's a great site for some things, but you have to like look under shops.
Yeah.
And put in Immortal Jewelry. You can't just Google, or excuse me, can't just put in the search at Etsy for that name and it won't pop it up.
Yeah.
But if you go Google it, I'm sure it will pop up.
And then you have a Facebook page for it as well too, right? Immortal Jewelry.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah. And I make custom pieces, and sometimes people will bring me their own personal special stones and say, hey, can you custom make something for this? And those are my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah, because people tell me exactly what they want, and I feel the person as I'm making it, and mm-hmm. I know what they need. And I have the heightened sensitivity to what those things are. And so sometimes when I'm making it, I will just, sometimes words will start coming out of my mouth when I'm making it, or yeah, just certain stuff. Patterns and shapes. You see Kundalini in there.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of it's feminine, some of it's masculine. I gotta be honest, sometimes I'll make a piece and I'd be like, I will never wear this. I would never wear it. And somebody will see it and be like, oh my gosh, this is my favorite thing I've ever seen in my life. And buy it and want to buy it for $1 million. You uh-huh. know what I mean? Kind of exaggerating there, but you get the point. Like they, yeah, people resonate or respond to it. And they see
the worth and the value in mm-hmm. it. Yeah.
It also feels really ancient, like there's an aspect of my ancient side of me that comes out.
Your past macrame life.
You will say that. Yeah, I study a lot. I do a lot of research on just hidden truths. Sacred geometry, numbers, colors, frequency, vibrations. Those are the main things.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, thank you so much, Amber. Mm-hmm. We've chatted forever and a day. And
yeah.
I loved it. It was really, really beneficial and helpful. Mm-hmm. I think that when I say it was really beneficial and helpful, I think it's awesome that we get to, you know, send this out there and people get to listen to it and get to hear all of our crazy ideas and concepts yeah. and expand their minds. But like we talked earlier in the episode, you always have some sort of exchange that happens. And so some of the things that we talk about, I know I'm going to be thinking about the next few days, and it's going to shift and change and alter my vibration. And mm-hmm. that's just one of the cool benefits of sitting on my side.
Yeah.
So thank you.
I was going to say that too, is whenever I've given readings, I know that a good portion of the time I'm getting the reading for myself just yeah. as much as the other person is. So
yeah the universe is pretty neat.
Yeah, thank you.
So everybody go out and check out her stuff. Like I said, she's got beautiful jewelry. It's just absolutely amazing. I've purchased some for my wife and everything, and really cool stuff. So go find her stuff. We'll post it up on the episode and everything as well. But go out and have a beautiful, wonderful day. And thank you, Amber.
Thank you. I'm just as human as anybody else. Relax into it, fall into it. I connected with Ganesh. Crack you wide open kind of experience. It felt like love.